had to go a little old school today. Wish I had some skates on y'all ass. Oh, had to play that Whispers. What's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of Tariq Radio. I'm your gracious host. My name is Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have everybody tuning in. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take some calls on today's show. The phone number is 818-850-5404. Let me play a commercial that we got going on. Hold on. Listen to this. Hold on. Let me play this. This is somebody. This is a poem. This is called Chocolate Covered Girls.
Chocolate Covered Girls.
This is Chocolate Covered Girls by the world-renowned poet named Esau Parker. He has a spoken word poem called Chocolate Covered Girls. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, and all other streaming sites. Follow him on Instagram at Esau Parker. That's E-S-A-U Parker. You dig? And learn some of his life-changing artistry. He has the Denzel vibe going on. But we're going to chop up some real good game on today's show. Again, the phone number is 818-850-5404. We're going to take a real quick commercial break. We'll be right back right here on Tariq Radio.
Learn the truth about the game by joining dating and life coach Mr. Locario and Miles Cunningham live in New York City on Saturday, April 14th at the NYC Seminar and Conference Center for the Truth About the Game seminar. In this seminar, Mr. Locario will teach you exactly what you need to know to be successful with women. Space is extremely limited, so purchase your tickets today at MrLocario.com. That's MRLOCARIO.com. MrLocario.com.
What up, everybody? It's your boy, Crispy, everybody. And I got a brand new video game app out right now, everybody. It's called Crispy's Biscuits, everybody. And you can get the Crispy's Biscuits app right now on the iPhone Apple Store, everybody. And you can also get it on the Google Play Store, everybody. As a matter of fact, everybody, it was the number one game on Google Play all last week, everybody. The game is so exciting, everybody. There's 10 levels you can help me get through, everybody. Where I'm dodging bottles of lotion, everybody. I'm dodging hair clippers, everybody. And I'm dodging taco meat, everybody. So get the Crispy's Biscuits game right now, everybody, at crispysbiscuits.com, everybody. Now I'm about to do my coon laugh, everybody.
The most intense new video game app has now arrived. A medieval kingdom has been plagued with chaos and disorder. An evil force has dominated the land. And now it is up to the bravest knights to fight back the demonic forces and bring justice to the kingdom of the Moors. Play the newest, most exciting battle fight game app ever, Moorish Kingdom. Available at moorishkingdom.com.
You're now tuning into the King of Game, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
Yo, what's going on, family? We are back. Welcome to Tariq Radio. Ready to chop up some good game, as we always do. Glad to have y'all tuning in. I'm going to take some calls today. I'm going to try to take some calls while I'm chopping up game with you guys. The phone number is 818-850-5404. My bad. It's time just kind of popped on, didn't it? Speaking of It's Time by my group, Mink Slide. You guys can go to minkslide.com right now and get the official Mink Slide t-shirts, ladies and gentlemen. The t-shirts are fly fresh, has that retro old school vibe. Look, get the t-shirts. We are the hottest new group in the game right now. So get your Mink Slide t-shirts, ladies and gentlemen. Now, a lot of stuff we got to talk about. And also, don't forget to get Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4 if you do not have your Hidden Colors DVDs. That's Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4, ladies and gentlemen. Now, again, the phone number is 818-850-5404. That is the number, 818-850-5404. Shout out to everybody who's contributing to the Melanoid Ministries. Now, last week, I've been talking about a situation where these children that were adopted, and I'm not going to go too deep into it because I've gone deep into it for the last week. Those children who were killed by their crazy ass white supremacist adopted parents. Now the media is coming on out admitting that everything was done deliberately. They're talking about more cases where it was reported that these children were being abused. I mean, several times. Now all the people are coming out in the woodworks. They're showing where these people were abusing these children. And this was something that was known. And this is why it's important for us, the melanoid community, the black community, to dictate the narrative. We got to keep the truth out there. We're the ones who are going to have to take a position of leadership when it comes to getting information out there. It's very important that we get information out there and we speak truth to power to let people know what's going on, to let people know what's happening, to let people in our community know what's going on. It's up to us to keep an eye on what's happening, and it's up for us to investigate and get the truth out there, because they're just not going to tell the truth in the dominant society unless it's forced, especially when it comes to talking about something that's going to threaten systematic white supremacy. And that's one thing to threaten them, is to show how devious they are and to show how they do children, to show the deviousness of white supremacy. That's threatening them, because see, that wakes people up. They understand if we see how devious they are and see what they will do to children, that will wake us up. Just that goes back to the Atlanta child murders. They didn't want to tell the truth about the Atlanta child murders, that it was really white supremacist groups behind that. And they made the fall guy Wayne Williams, because they knew black people waking up, that would be a problem, especially in that day and age. And I talked about that before. But it's very important for us to drive the narrative. It's very important for us to be in a position where we can share information and keep eyes on the ground, keep boots on the ground, so that we can give each other correct information, because the media is just not going to do it. And of all people, Dan Rather, he came out talking about how the media now is not even real media. It's become propaganda. This is them. The people in the dominant society are admitting this now. They're talking about how corporations, which owns a lot of these media companies, it's like one main corporation, one main headquarters that owns a lot of media conglomerates, and the corporation, they're in the pockets of the political people, so they will pass down a script so all the networks can read the same script. There was something on the internet the other day showing how thousands of these networks will literally say the exact same thing. So that means that there is a central narrative being pushed down. Yes, the Sinclair Group, all those media conglomerates under Sinclair, the news anchors literally say all the same shit. They pass down a script from the top and they all regurgitate the same thing. That's not media. That's propaganda. Elevation Allah, see you in the chat room. I had to demod you, brother. You were blocking people in the room who shouldn't have been blocked. So I had to demod you, brother. Shout out to everybody in the YouTube chat room, by the way. What's up, Ms. Love? I see you. The phone number again is 818-850-5404. That is the number. But what I want to talk about today, I want to talk to black folks about understanding potential threats and not being docile around potential threats. See, we have this thing where we give people passes. We don't know how to assess a potential threat and thwart that threat. This is something that black people are going to have to be well versed in. We're going to have to take that type of position. This whole docile, happy-go-lucky, everybody can come around and just penetrate our areas, we're going to have to get off that. We're going to have to get off that, family. We're going to have to learn how to show hostility to potential threats. We shouldn't even have to wait until they become a threat. If we see a potential threat, we have to know how to be hostile towards that potential threat. Because understand, the dominant white society, they understand how to be hostile to you. See, the thing is, the minute you, black people, the minute you show up anywhere in their circles, just you showing up, you can be in a three-piece suit, you can be the nicest person in the world, but the fact that you show up, they go on alert and they treat you as a hostility. You do not understand how much the white supremacists call the police on black people just randomly. If you're in a neighborhood, understand this. If you're walking around in a white neighborhood, black person, if you're walking around innocently, it's almost guaranteed that several people have called the police on you already. It's almost guaranteed. Just you showing up, you walking around. I have something called the Ring app. There's a thing called the Ring app, and it's a thing where you can see people at your door and you can look at it online. And there's also a community where you can talk about potential threats in neighborhoods. And all I see all day, I get alerts where random suspected white supremacists are just reporting black people in their neighborhoods. That's all they do. It's like sometimes it's Girl Scouts. It's kids raising money for school. They're like, there's this girl. She's at my doorstep. She has Girl Scout cookies, but she might be casing my house. It's that type of thing. Even the police, they have complained that so many suspected white supremacists are out here calling police. They say that their phone lines get jammed up for people just randomly calling the police on black people. They do that all the time. This is how so many black people get killed. They understand the system of white supremacy. They like to be in a position where they can help get you killed. That's how little Tamir Rice got killed. That dirty little white supremacist sitting in the park watching that little boy play. He knew that was a little boy playing with a toy. He knew it. But he got on that phone and said, hey, there's this guy with a gun. It might be a toy, but I think it's a gun. And they came with guns blazing, shooting down a child. So a kid playing is a potential threat. But when it comes to us, we allow potential threats, if they come in smiling, if they come in acting friendly, we allow potential threats because we're so desperate collectively to get approval from the dominant society. We want them to come in. We're looking for the good white folks, as the black female co-host said to me on a show I was at recently down in Miami. I played that this weekend. They were talking about finding good white folks. And black folks have that good white folks mentality. I'm desperate to find good white folks. And we got to get off that. We got to have an indifferent mentality. And this is global. Not just in America, but black people all over the world have this mentality. We got to shake that. That's one thing that has us in this tether that we've been in for the last 500 years. We have to learn how to be hostile to a potential threat. And like I said, in Hidden Colors 4, everybody should have that DVD from HiddenColorsFilm.com. The only black people on the planet that is immediately hostile to any potential threat, no matter how nice the threat is, are the black people of North Sentinel Island. An island in the Indian Ocean. I've spoken about it many times, but these black folks, they've been there for thousands of years. And historically, European writers from all over the world, going all the way back to Marco Polo, said, don't go over there fucking with them. Marco Polo said this. This goes back into the Renaissance era. Marco Polo said, hey, I went to China. I went to all these places. The people are cool, but it's them niggas over there on that island. Hell no, don't fuck with them. They will slice your ass down the minute you show up. They already know They know you're going to be a threat. They don't care how nice you are. And they go over there and try to make nice gestures. They tried to do a documentary about them in 1974. I think it was some UK, it might have been a British or a French filmmaker that went over there. Well, they tried to go over there. They were off the shore trying to find a way to get on shore. And the people were letting them know, hey, y'all need to back up. And they were, the filmmakers was like, hey, you know, we come in peace. We come in peace. And one of them brothers threw a spear out there and stabbed this motherfucker in the leg. They saw how precise they were with those damn spears. And they're like, okay, we need to do another movie about something else, because this ain't going to be it. They know they're not taking your bullshit fake kindness. They already know. And to this day, they don't fuck with North Sentinel Island. They do not. They make movies about it. The King Kong movies about North Sentinel Island. When they talk about that Skull Island, they're talking about North Sentinel Island. They're talking about this uninhabited island in the Indian Ocean. That's what the whole King Kong movie is about. This island that they can't go to. If they go there, they're going to get killed, or they're going to have to kill everybody, which will make it useless because they have to blow the place up. And the place is sitting, I think, the reason why they haven't blown it up, is sitting in that tsunami zone. And if they have any type of atomic activity in that particular location, that might be catastrophic for the global sphere. So that's one of the reasons I think they haven't really rocked with that place and tried to come at them with bombs and all, because that's the only way you can get on there. You have to blow everybody up. Them niggas don't play those games. And it's only a few hundred of them. See, that's why I always talk about the 300. It's only a few hundred people on North Sentinel Island. It's only a couple of hundred people on that island. And they've shut down everybody. You can't fuck with their shit. They let you know we're all on the same page. All 300-400 of us. All of us on the same page. And we all say, if you bring your ass on this island, you gonna die, we gonna die. Somebody's dying. Now bring that shit on, because we ain't scared to die. And then people back up off of them. This is why I always talk about the 300. I just need 300 down-ass people. All this talk about, we all need to get together. All black folks, we just need to, what we need to do is learn how to get along with each other. We don't need to do shit. What you need to do is find you at least 300 people that's on the same page as you. You can change the world. That goes back to Sparta. It's 300 broke down a major army. They positioned themselves as 300 left, and they whooped ass and made history. It don't take a lot of people. It just takes a small amount of people who are on the same page. Look at the Haitian Revolution. You go check out the movie 1804. We talk about that. Everybody wasn't on the same page at the start of the revolution. There was a voodoo ceremony with a few hundred people. It might have been 1,000. I don't know. But I think it was a few hundred people at that voodoo ceremony. I'm not sure how many people it was. I don't think it was 1,000. But it was a few hundred people at least. Because, look, remember, a lot of people, you know, they were down to just go along to get along. But it was a few hundred people who had that voodoo ceremony. And they said, hey, they decided this shit is going to stop. We're going to have to get rid of these coons, but we're going to make sure this shit is going to stop. And they made it stop. 300 folks make a decision and say, this is what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be. When you go to Kickstarter, look at Hidden Colors. The first Hidden Colors campaign we had in 2010. That was the first campaign we had for Hidden Colors on Kickstarter. And this Kickstarter was relatively new. A lot of folks didn't know about Kickstarter. We had a total of 302 backers on Kickstarter for Hidden Colors 1. 302 backers. And those 300 people helped change the world. They helped change how history is taught. The Hidden Colors series has become huge, the biggest selling Black history documentary series ever. I'm talking ever. No other documentary about Black history has been more successful than the Hidden Colors series. This thing has resonated globally. It's taught in universities globally. It's influenced so many people in the public sphere. It has woken a lot of people up. And I say this, if it weren't for the success of the Hidden Colors film, we would not have the Wakanda, the Black Panther, because we showed them that there was an audience for that. Nobody was trying to do anything like that. They didn't give a shit about giving a positive message to the Black audience. Until we took control of the narrative and showed there was a market for that. And then our film started to outsell theirs. They would put out documentaries and ours would consistently hit number one over theirs. So they were forced to deal with the awakened audience. And that all got started with our 300. Do you understand that? 300 down ass people, you can move shit. You can move and change and reshape the world just getting a group of people. It doesn't even have to be a lot. Just a group of people on the same page, on the same code. You understand? Now somebody, I got a coon in the room. He said Wakanda was made way before Hidden Colors. No, nigga. The comic book was made. The comic book was made, but the movie was not. And let's be real. They weren't about to make it either. They kept putting out these movies where they were trying to whitewash history. And because people were collectively awakened, we kept rejecting that. They kept making these movies. If it weren't for us telling the truth, and this is where we go with telling the truth, they would have kept on making these Gods of Egypt movies where all the Egyptians are white, and Exodus where all the Egyptians are white, and The Mummy where all the Egyptians are white. And because of the success of what we were doing on a grassroots level, we were making those movies flop. And I'm telling you, it's a direct correlation, because in the international media, they would always quote me when talking about Exodus. Google all that. Google my name in the movie Exodus and Gods of Egypt. They would always quote me in the international press, in the Australian press, in the Asian press, all over. When I would go to the UK, they would ask me about these movies and the correlation between those movies and mine. So we were going after the necks of these people making these bullshit ass movies. And you can't have complete bullshit out there and you got the truth over here smacking people in the face. You dig? You can't have a number one movie over here telling the truth, giving you all types of receipts on what the people look like and who they were and the real names. And then you put a multi-million dollar bunch of bullshit over here. The truth is always going to win, ultimately, if you put enough people behind it on a grassroots level. This is why that grassroots is important. You understand? No, somebody said they made Black Panther because of... No, I'm not going there. I'm not a descendant now. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we helped create the market for that. I 100% say that. We helped create the market for that. There is a reason why they're naming movies Hidden Figures and all that. Come on now. Let's not be fake. There's a reason why they're naming their movies Hidden Figures. There's a reason why the major corporations and the major studios are putting out movies like 13, which was basically like Hidden Colors. They got some of the same people in it. You understand? Facts are facts. This ain't ego talking. I'm talking about moving things and doing things as a unit and being on code and having a grassroots movement. And let's go deep. Y'all know, if y'all remember, there were some things. I was about to get into a legal thing with Nike, because Nike put out a line of t-shirts, and I want y'all to Google this, because Hidden Colors was so successful. Nike put out a line of t-shirts called Hidden Images. and the t-shirts looked exactly like the DVD color of Hidden Colors 2. It looked exactly like the DVD color of Hidden Colors 2. It was a big thing about that. And they ended up taking them off the market. But Google that. Google that. Google Hidden Images Nike and Hidden Colors 2. It was about to be a big legal thing about that. So they watch what we do. Don't think for a minute they don't watch what's happening on a grassroots level. See, our thing, we've gotten into a position where we start taking our cues from them, those in the dominant society. They tell us what to do and how to think, and we start doing it. No, it ain't supposed to be like that. We're supposed to be in the forefront. We're supposed to be the forerunners. And when we do like that, when we take that position on a grassroots level, they have to get in. They're forced to get in. They are forced to get in. Yeah, it was those LeBron James t-shirts. They're watching what we do. Let's be very clear. They keep an eye on what's happening. Everybody does. I remember I was talking about this before when speaking of our clothing at the in TariqElite.com. That's our clothing line, TariqElite.com. When we were up at the clothing fair, the magic show up there in Vegas where you have all the vendors, they had us in the urban section. And I remember there was a sister who was over there in the urban section just kind of kicking it in our booth and hanging around all the booths. And we were chopping it up. And she told me, she was like, you know, the Asians hired me to come over here to see what you guys are doing. Because all the Asians, they had their little section on the other side. They had a whole different section, but they had all the quote unquote urban designers in one section. Like it was me and Tiger. He has his clothing line was directly across from mine. And, you know, they had all the urban things in one area. And this sister, she straight up said the Asians hired her to go see what we had going on, to monitor us. I'm like, oh, okay, okay. And I'm glad we were I'm glad she broke it down. I'm glad she broke it on down. But that's what they do. They monitor what we do, and they learn how to ride our backs. And this is why we have to somehow be hostile to a lot of people who try to get in with us and try to get comfortable with us. Because once they come around us, or once they pretend to emulate us, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. If you give them an inch, they will take a damn mile. There's this YouTuber. His name is Kian Lawley. He looks kind of moist. He might be gay. I don't know. He kind of looks like it. But he's a popular YouTuber. I don't know too much about the guy, but I do know that there was a controversy where he was going to be on this major film, and they kicked him off the film because some of his videos surfaced where he was using very strong anti-black racist bullshit words. And I looked at some videos of this guy. Now, what's interesting, he was one of these white dudes who tried to casually say nigga, and this is why we got to stop being comfortable around these white supremacist suspects saying nigga around us. I'm not cool with it. If they say nigga around me, I'm not fucking with them. Do you understand? I'm cool on a white supremacist suspect running around me saying nigga. I don't want him around me if he's doing all that. But this Kian Lawley dude, I've seen videos of him just kind of casually like, man, come on, man. I'm at the club. Man, these niggas are crazy, man. He's talking like that. See, they'll try to be on some real casual. I'm just hip. I'm just a hip white guy. Yo, yo, yo. I'm just a hip white guy. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Word to your mother. I'm just hip. And then this Kian Lawley dude, he got comfortable just kind of casually saying nigga. And then that ER started coming out strong. He got around some of his white friends, and all of a sudden he was like, yeah, look at this fried chicken eating nigger. This fucking dumbass fried chicken eating nigger on my timeline. Then he started talking that. Then it became fried chicken eating nigger. You dig what I'm saying? Look up Kian, K-I-A-N, Lawley. Look him up. And a lot of these popular white YouTubers have suspected white supremacist tendencies, a lot of them. That's why they're popular, and they know how to code it. And every now and then, they'll get high or drunk and just go off code and just go all the way out and get caught out there like that. Like that Phil guy. What's that guy? I done clowned him several times. He's a popular YouTuber, and I exposed some of his racist-ass videos. He's talking shit about black folks. Another Justin Bieber. Again, I still don't fuck with Justin Bieber, and y'all still want to give his ass a pass. I don't give Justin Bieber a pass. All that yo-yo-yo bullshit don't impress me. I really would wish black folks get that stupid fucking shit in your head. That shit should not impress you, hanging around these dudes who are getting around you with the hat backwards in there. Yo-yo. Yeah, Phil DeFranco. That's who I'm talking about. But these dudes getting around you, yo, yo, yo. Oh, man, he down, man. He can say that. He just down. No, he ain't down. He get around his white friends, and all of a sudden, you're a fried chicken eating nigga. And if you cool with that, you're just a docile coon. Let's stop the games. If you cool with these potential threats being around you, you're just another docile coon. Nothing more, nothing less. See, you got to be in a position where you G-check the fuckery. That's why I talk about MC Search. He's a white rapper, or used to be white rapper, with the group Third Base. And he was yo-yo-yo, had a black wife and all that old shit. And that's another thing. They love getting a black wife, so that really means they ain't racist, right? Right? MC Search was on the yo-yo-yo-yo bullshit, and he was down, and he was hooking people up with record deals. He got Nas a record deal and all this stuff, so we had this thing where we're going to invite him to the barbecue, but then he started getting a little reckless with the mouthpiece. He got too comfortable and started trying to openly talk greasy about other black folks like Hammer. He was under the impression that Hammer was like Vanilla Ice and Hammer was somehow soft, and he didn't know that Hammer and all his people were 100% with the shits, 100% about that life. And then when MC Search brought his ass out here to L.A., he found out there was a hit on his ass because the streets was about to light him up. There was a code. There was a street code. And that brings us to the suspected white supremacist Michael Rappaport. Now, him, again, I've been going back and forth with his ass on social media. He was on Watch What Happened Live with Kenya Moore, and he was on there. They were snapping, and he was talking about her feet, her ass. She just really going in on it. She was lighting his ass up, too. He was trying to talk slick, and she was right there lighting his ass up. And the thing is, these white supremacist suspects, they don't pull that shit with white women. White women actresses, they don't get on there trying to insult him and talk greasy to him. They don't do that. They know better than to do that, but they get around sisters and they think they can go in. They think because they're fucking a sister, they can talk to all sisters any kind of way. Because they got a bed wench at home, they're used to talking to sisters fucked up. Because they got that bed wench in their house doing God knows what. So they think any sister is their property, so they can say whatever the fuck they want to say. Remember, they don't do that to white women. And that's another reason I stopped listening to Howard Stern. I used to listen to Howard Stern, but one thing I noticed, Robin Quivers. Now, Robin Quivers, that's his black female co-host. She's bedwinchy. You know, she has a little bedwinch thing there just to sit around all that damn racism they spew. But they would do this thing where they would make song parodies about Robin Quivers. They would make song parodies about her breasts, and all these white dudes would send in song parodies. And every time she does the news, she does a news segment, they're making songs about busting the nut on her breasts and her chocolate titties. And the first couple of ones were kind of funny, but then it became an everyday thing. And then it became on some, it turned into some white supremacist creepy shit. Even though she's a bed wench who sits up there and giggles along with Howard Stern's bullshit, it still be, I didn't want to hear some plantation shit like that, because I know that these dudes wouldn't do that to a white female co-host. You couldn't have a white female co-host on your show where you're talking about busting nuts on her titties and all. You couldn't do that, because that white woman will have Gloria Allred shut that place down. You dig? So little stuff like that. These white supremacist suspects, they get around sisters and they feel like they can talk any way they want to talk. So people were going in on Michael Rapaport. He's talking shit to me. And Michael Rapaport, he's always been on that fuckery. And there are people actually defending Michael Rapaport now. Michael Rapaport, he's one of these people who comes, he comes around with the yo, 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 I'm down, yo, yo, word to the mother, yo, all that. I'm so not impressed by that shit. I'm so not impressed by that. And, you know, people talking about how Rapaport was talking about Kenya Moore on his social media. Then he posted pictures of monkeys and all this. So, you know, he's with the fuckery. But Michael Rapaport, he's been given warning signs before. We've called out his warning signs. And again, if they get away with one thing, they'll try to push the envelope. Now, understand, Michael Rapaport was talking greasy about Colin Kaepernick. People gave him a pass, but when I saw that, I'm like, I don't know. You going somewhere? I'm uncomfortable where you going. And somebody said, time for a puppet. I'm already ahead of you, by the way, family. I see people in the chat room said it's time for a puppet. I'm already ahead of you. That's all I'll say right now. But I don't like the bullshit he was saying about Kaepernick. I don't like the shit he was saying about LaVar Ball's shoes. I didn't like that at all. And I don't like the way he was doing business with Tribe Called Quest. Understand, he did that documentary with Tribe Called Quest, and there was some bullshit going on behind the scenes. He was doing some real slick shit behind the scenes with them. You understand? And they had a little problem with his ass. So he's always been a problematic dude as far as that. And my girl from Straight From The A, he made a reference to her like, yeah, ho. Called a hoe, y'all hoes, and all the, you dig? You don't get no pass from me doing that because they don't let you do it to white women. Black folks, you can't go to white women talking greasy and the white dudes are going to sit there and co-sign you. They don't like that. They'll shut that shit down. You can't talk greasy to the white women. They will shut it down or they're not going to co-sign you. And you're a fucking coon if you co-sign him talking greasy about folks. Yeah, Q-Tip and those dudes weren't feeling him. He was doing all types of little slick shit behind the scenes. Michael Rapaport, again, him, the alt-right Andes and all these people, the yo-yo-yo white dudes, just because they're going around yo-yo-yoing and banging sisters left and right, these dudes are still team white supremacy. These dudes have no problem with maintaining the system of white supremacy. While he's yo-yo-yoing and y'all talking about having Michael Rapaport at the barbecue, listen to some of this shit. Just like alt-right Andy. Andrew Schultz. Would you want Andrew Schultz on a jury that you're in a courtroom for? You're done if you get some alt-right Andys on a jury. That's how I look at it. I look at his ideology overall. If I'm on a jury and if I'm in a court case and he's on the jury, I'm fucked. And you think because this motherfucker got his hat turned backwards and he's yo-yo-yoing and he got a sister he's fucking at home, he's somehow going to see some kind of camaraderie with you. You got to understand, a lot of these white dudes who get with sisters, a lot of them do it out of strategy. They're trying to get something. Well, damn near all of them is. There's some type of angle with it. And also, it's some type of vendetta. Just like that Crystal Karazin chick. Somebody was giving me some information about her dude because she has a white husband, and there was some information about her husband was with some white chick back in college and some brother took his chick. So this white dude seemed like he went on a vendetta and got him a good bed wench, and he's the battery behind her back getting her to do all that anti-black male bullshit. But we got to know when we're around a damn threat. People like Michael Rapaport is a damn threat. Fuck all that. Yo, yo, yo. I listen to hip hop. Yeah. Look at his views on gentrification. You know, I think he was in a Spike Lee movie. Or was he in a few Spike Lee movies, Michael Rapaport? But Spike Lee was snapping on Michael Rapaport over his views on gentrification. Because Michael Rapaport is on some pro-gentrification shit while he's yo, yo, yoing. And yeah, Joe Rogan, too. Joe Rogan says a lot of little suspect shit, too. by the way. But listen to this clip of Spike Lee talking about Michael Rapaport and his views on gentrification.
Said, do you think gentrification is positive? And that's when I lost it.
You know, hold on one second, because Michael Rapaport was here a little while ago, and he actually responded to your comments on gentrification. Mm-hmm. Take this out.
I mean, Spike lives on the Upper East Side. In the, if the people that donated money to Spike Lee's film, his last film, saw the apartment that he lived in, they would bug out.
And you notice that he's up here talking about Spike's money. Like, yeah, people saw how Spike was living and they would donate to his movie. They'd bug out. The white supremacists love counting the niggas' money. You notice that? They love counting niggas' money. That really chaps their ass. When a brother has a few chips in his pocket, they love counting the fucking money. That's why whenever I do a movie, it's these white supremacists pretending to be Negroes talking about how much money I got. They love, that's the go-to thing with me. The alt-right, look at Tariq. I see white supremacy is treating you good, dude, living in your house. You're doing good off white supremacy. They love being in a nigga's pocket. They love that. But let me play the rest.
I don't know what he's talking about. You know, neighborhoods change, life change, life changes. You know, Spike Lee, you know, went from, you know, being a Knicks fan, sitting in the blue seats. Now, you know, people evolve, things evolve, they get better. You know what I mean? And those neighborhoods in Brooklyn, the majority of the neighborhoods that have been gentrified were either abandoned. Williamsburg was a joke in the 90s. It was like this little niche place. And it was like,
where are my New York people? Where are my New York people? Was Brooklyn, those places that's being gentrified, was not abandoned? And I'm not from New York. I don't know the areas too well, but I've been to New York a lot of times. And some of these places that's been gentrified was not fucking abandoned. And I don't even live there. Where are my New York people? I used to go to Harlem all the time. Harlem wasn't abandoned. You understand? The fuck is he talking about? I ain't even from there. I know that's some bullshit. That's the same shit they say about South Africa, by the way. Yeah, we went to South Africa and nobody was there. We were just there. It was empty. It was abandoned. So we just took over. So I don't know what these niggas are complaining about. Gentrification? What? No. We went to South Africa and it was just uninhabited. So now Brooklyn was abandoned? Okay.
Hold on. Like this little niche place, and it was like, you know, warehouses. It's good that it got better.
First of all,
Spike about to go. He said, it's good that it got better. Meaning white. Yeah, abandoned by white people. That's what he means. Abandoned. See, this is the yo-yo-yo. See that yo-yo-yo bullshit? And he sounds like the fucking alt-right. While you're impressed by the yo-yo-yo, he sounds just like Richard fucking Spencer. And Mike Cernovich and all these fucking dudes. And it got better. It's good that it got better, meaning whiter. They didn't need to put white people in there. They just needed to give the people the proper resources and the job opportunities that they were holding on to. That's what they needed. But listen to that white supremacist language.
First of all, motherfucking Rapaport doesn't know what he's fucking talking about.
Spike going off on his
ass. Here's the thing. Gentrification, what Michael Rapaport left out because he's stupid, he did not talk about the people who can no longer afford to live in Williamsburg, who can no longer afford to live in Fort Greene, who can no longer afford to live in Clinton Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better for you, for the people who moved in. Why, let me ask you this. For the schools to get better in Fort Greene, why do we have gentrification? For the garbage to be picked up, why happen because of gentrification? When you see white young women pushing their kids in strollers down 125th Street, 3 o'clock in the morning, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? There's more police present.
Right, because it's safe.
But where was the police before white people moved into Fort Greene?
Exactly.
I mean, excuse me, Harlem.
Yeah.
Why don't people are missing the point? People are being displaced, and they never talk about the people who are forced to live out of their neighborhoods because of gentrification.
Boom. Real talk. Real fucking talk. But all that yo-yo, but he said yo-yo-yo, word to your mother, yo-yo-yo, fuck out of here. That's why I ain't impressed by the yo-yo-yo, because when it's time to take over somebody's neighborhood and displace people, well, it's good that it got better, yo-yo-yo, fuck out of here. I ain't co-signing no white supremacist bullshit-ass talk like that. That's where they get y'all. See, when they come in with the yo-yo-yo talk, that's to throw you off so you don't know what they're planning and plotting. That's how they run game on you. They go in there yo-yo-yoing and you put your defenses down and they working behind the scenes to move your black ass up out the neighborhood. You got to move because you can't pay the rent. He done moved in with all of his other yo-yo-yo hipster buddies. That's how they get you. Those hipsters come in, y'all so desperate for approval. They come in, hey, man, let's smoke some weed. Yo-yo-yo, I'm moving here to the hood with you. Yo-yo-yo, let's smoke, man. Let's dance. Let me teach me the new nigga dance. Yo-yo-yo, they teach all that. Now, when it's time for their kids to go to school, they are not about to put their kids in your school. They'll walk the dog around the neighborhood and all that, and they'll smoke with you. They'll sing some hip-hop songs with you. But when these hipsters start having kids and it's time to put them kids in school, guess what? They ain't about to be classmates with your kids. That's when you start to see your ass is about to get moved up out of there. When it comes to putting their children in them schools, all of a sudden your rent got real high, didn't it? Now you got to move. Just like out here in L.A. I know out here in L.A., all the black folks out there in Lancaster and Riverside. Why? Because the rent in Inglewood, Compton, South Central, all of the rents started getting high as hell. Now you go to Inglewood, that shit looks like the Beverly Center now. You go to the what used to be called the Fox Hill Mall, that shit like Orange County somewhere. See, we got to stop being docile about potential threats. I'm not impressed by these yo-yo-yo dudes. Even Rude Jude on Shade 45, he's another yo-yo-yo dude. And I was on Jenny Jones with Rude Jude years ago. We were cool. We were cordial. But Rude Jude slipped up a few times on the Shade 45 show. He was talking some alt-right shit a couple of times, some shit that made me raise my antennas about his ass. He was talking some shit that sounded straight from Stormfront. You understand? He says a lot of little low-key slick shit, and he didn't fuck some sisters and all that. I'm not impressed by that. We got to be on code with it. This is why we've been seeing a lot of videos of these white supremacist males going into these black areas, beating up sisters, and these Asians beating up sisters and all that. And that has to be shut down immediately. That has to be shut down because you give them an inch, they take a mile. Now, luckily, I just saw another video and I posted it on Twitter down in Dallas. There was some black neighborhood, some white dude was beating up this sister. He was trying to take something out of her jacket. I don't know what the situation was. I do not know if they knew each other. I don't know if he was trying to get drugs or he was trying to get sex. I don't know what happened. He was in there doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing. And the who, what, why don't make a difference. He was in this neighborhood beating his sister up. He was on top of his sister, manhandling her. He had her pinned down, and some brothers came from all directions and lit his ass up. I say bravo to them brothers. Them brothers came and whooped his ass. No questions asked. That's how you do. You'll find out what happened later, but right now, you are not beating up no sister right here in this neighborhood while we're standing around. That's not going to happen. We'll find out the who, what, when, where, how later. But you're going to get your ass whooped now. That's how you got to be. Now, I've had coons pop up like, man, what if look like she might have stole something. Man, we don't know the truth. Sit your coon ass down. and going over there. You are an enemy. You are an enemy. If you coons want to make excuses for white daddy, sit your ass down over there. We're going to put you on the coon list so when shit goes down, we know where you are and we know where you stand. Because I showed another video of, and I talked about this before, there was a black store manager who was at a CVS store. There was this white female who went in there shoplifting, and she's trying to fight the store manager, and he's holding her until the police come. He's making sure she's not running out, and he's making sure she's not hitting him. So he's handling her, making sure that everybody else in the store is safe. There were white women coming up to him saying, hey, she's still a woman now. Don't you hurt her. They're checking him. They're checking the black man, knowing that this woman is a shoplifter, but they're still checking him. Hey, don't hurt her now. She's still a woman. Watch it. One woman even said, hey, watch your mouth with her. Don't you talk out of... I mean, they're really checking this brother. Knowing that this woman is a thief, they don't give a fuck about her being a thief. They're looking at him. You better watch it. And she looked like she was on meth or something, but they still got on code. We got to be the same way too. You see a black person getting jumped or beat up by somebody in the dominant society, it's your obligation to shut that shit down. It's your obligation to shut that shit down. And the thing is, that brings us to comedian Gary Owen. Gary Owen, he's funny. I think Gary Owens is funny. He's cool with my dude, Brad. My dude, Brad from Atlanta. I've been knowing Brad for over 20 years. Good dude. So him and Gary Owen, they're real tight. I know my man Brad goes on the road with him. And Gary Owens, he has a black wife. He came up in the black comedy circuit. And his whole shtick is, hey, I'm the white guy married to a black chick. And, you know, I'm surrounded by black culture. So that's his whole shtick. Now, Gary Owens is funny. His shit is funny. Some of his shit is funny. I laugh. It's funny. So Corey Holcomb said Gary was suspect. Okay. I see it. Now, what made me raise antennas about Gary was the comments about Monique recently. You know, the whole controversy about Monique. And Gary put his two cents in. And that raised my antennas right there. He's like, yeah, Monique needs to be quiet. And, you know, Monique is full of shit. And I'm like, okay, I ain't with that. He was kind of going in on Monique a little bit too much. He was going in on Monique a little bit too much for me. And that raised my antennas. I said, okay, I ain't feeling where this dude is going. I ain't feeling where he's going with that. So my antennas were raised. So now my antennas were doubly raised recently because Gary Owen, he went on The Breakfast Club and he went dressed up as that Tekashi 6ix9ine dude. He was kind of mocking him. And that was funny. He was mocking him. And that's another thing. Just because somebody white is mocking another white person or even mocking another racist person, that doesn't mean they don't have the same views. Just like with Michael Rapaport, he goes in on Trump a lot. So we think, oh, yeah, that's a down-ass white boy going in on Trump. That don't mean nothing. There's a lot of other white supremacists who don't like Trump. There's a lot of white supremacists who have a civil war with each other, but they're still team white supremacy. So don't be fooled by that now. I'm not impressed just because you don't like Trump. Are you producing justice? Fuck who you don't like, nigga. Are you producing justice for black people? Because we need it. And if you're not, go sit your ass down. But he was, Gary Owen was on The Breakfast Club. He was acting like Tekashi 6ix9ine. And then he made a joke about Michael Blackston not being funny. Yeah, he ain't that funny. He's a one-trick pony. Just says, mother sucker. Nah, I think he was joking, whatever. Then Michael Blackston responded. He started going in on Gary. I think it's all jokes. It's all jokes. Halfway joking, halfway serious. You know, all jokes are seeped in a little seriousness. You dig? So, Gary Owen and Michael Blackston, the comedian, they're going back and forth. Then, now Gary took it to another level. Gary did a video with his wife. His wife is black. And Gary was like, yeah, I can't say the N-word, but my wife can. And this video is cringe-worthy. This shit is cringe-worthy. And let me play the video, the audio of the video now. This is Gary Owen, the comedian, responding to Michael Blackston. And he's sitting here with his wife. And she's black.
Michael Blackston, I saw your little weak comeback where you said I smell like a wet dog. Well, my dog's wet. Smells amazing. Yeah, I kissed her. White guy stuff right there. Also, I heard you said I won't say the N-word back to you. You dared me. I ain't got to say it back. My lady will say it for me. I got a down-ass chick. Michael Blackston, you punk ass.
Nigga.
Ho. Michael Blackston, you bitch ass.
Nigga.
God, I wish I could say it. Now, maybe some dinner, baby.
Who are you talking to? Who's talking like that?
No, I want to eat. I'm gangster mode.
It's not about you. It's about that black nigga. Okay?
What about you? God. Okay. Yeah. No. That right there is some 12 years of slave bedwinchery. That my man's wife just revealed that she's a first degree bedwinch. Number one, none of that was funny whatsoever. None of that was funny at all. And they're sitting here with shades on and shit, and she's up here yelling nigga. And then she took it to a whole different level. Yeah, that black ass nigga. Good fucking grief. That's a first degree fucking bedwinch. She should have known better. And Gary, you should have known better. To put some shit like that out, dude. You look like a slave owner right now. That's slave owner shit. That's some major fucking bedwinching right there. That's some major bedwinching right there. You can't even clean that up. That ain't even comedy. We can't even chop that up to comedy. That's just straight up butter biscuit eating bedwinching. And the thing is, there's some Negroes co-signing that on Gary Webb's Instagram. There's some Negroes laughing at that. You know how weak you are to laugh at some shit like that? That's not even funny, but it's a scared laugh. It's a docile laugh. If you think that that's any way remotely funny, this white dude has this black wife sitting up here calling somebody else a black ass nigga, and you think that's funny in any way, shape, or form, you are a butter biscuit eating fucking coon your damn self. And I hope you're not following me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or any other social media site if you think shit like that is funny. See, that's my thing. I want to see who's laughing at fuck shit like this. So you can back up and not be around me. You dig? Yeah, those were not jokes. That's coon train shit all day. And when you see stuff like that, when you see these suspected white supremacists get that comfortable pulling off slave owner shit like that, getting his mammy to do his dirty work for them, it only goes downhill from there. It gets worse. And understand, you won't see a white female do no shit like that. You don't see no white female, especially of no known entertainers, the spouse of a known entertainer, even an unknown one, but you will not see, not at all, the spouse of a known black entertainer who's white, comedian or otherwise, You won't see a white woman get up here talking about some other white person's a cracker this, a cracker that, a dumbass white ass cracker. You will not see that. They know, even though they're fucking a black person, they're going to stay on code with white supremacy. They're not going to do that. They are just not going to do that. That's why you don't see it. But too many bedwinches are lining up. The minute white daddy says, attack that Negro over there, you do it with bells on. You're so quick to jump and attack a black male because white pappy told you to. You understand? That's a very bad look. That's nothing but 100% bedwinching. And that's docility and weakness. That's just being docile and weak. And once you're that docile and weak and you go unchecked, that lets the white supremacists go in and just clean up shop. That's how they can come in and colonize, because they colonize your mind first. Before you can colonize the land, you got to colonize the mind. And he's saying, ooh, I wish I could say that. I wish I could say that. Because he knows, you know, he goes out here on the road, one of these comedians, they fuck around and knock his ass out. But there's a lot. My problem is not just with these two, both of them. It's the coons co-signing it. I have the bigger problem with that. All the weak-ass coons, desperate for approval, co-signing it. Men and women, Negroes and Negresses. I can understand there's a lot of bedwinches out here who they'll lay up with white daddy and have white daddy calling them nigger and all types of stuff. There's a hashtag on Twitter where they were talking about negative experiences with interracial dating, these sisters. And I got to repost a lot of that stuff. They were talking about, yeah, I went out with this white guy. We start having sex and he started calling me a nigger whore. So never again. Y'all learn the hard way. Sometimes you don't learn the hard way and you just kind of go along with it. You like being a nigger whore in the bedroom. Some of y'all just go along with it. And some of you dudes who are caping for this, you want to be a Negro buck in the room. You want to be a bed buck. You wish you were the black woman so you can spread your boy hole open so white daddy can run up in you. That's what we got. We got a lot of moist little wannabe bed wenches out here in the form of these dudes, these wannabe bed bucks. I saw a clip that reminded me of a clip of the show I saw last night, The Last OG. It was a pretty good show. That's Tracy Morgan and Tiffany Haddish. And the show was about Tracy Morgan's character. He goes to jail for like 15 years. So he gets out and there's like a culture change. And in one scene, he went back to Brooklyn and it was these two dudes standing on the corner. You know, they had on leather jackets and the baseball hats, and he walked up to him. He was like, hey, man, yo, I just got out of jail, son. I used to be just like you on the corner, man, you know, thugging it up. I'm telling you, there's a better way, man. You can turn your life around. He thought they were some thugs. And then the dudes was like, excuse me? They were two gay dudes. He's like, oh, shit, the neighborhood has changed. But the show, check out the show. The show is very, it's a good show so far. It's a very short show. It's like 30 minutes. It was funny to me. I like this show. But we got to understand this. There's a lot of these dudes out here and a lot of Negroes who look at situations like this and they want to be in a bed wench, bed buck type relationship. This is why they fake laugh, because the shit ain't funny. You can't laugh at no shit like this for real because it ain't funny. This chick sitting up here with her white husband up here talking about, hey, yeah, you black ass nigga. What the fuck is funny about that? That's tragic. There's nothing funny about that. That's some tragic 12 years of slave shit. And we got to stop pretending misery is entertaining. Anyway, let me get up out of here, man. Don't forget, go to minkslide.com. Get your Mink Slide t-shirts, ladies and gentlemen. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4 if you don't have them already. Get 1804, The Hidden History of Haiti, the greatest documentary on the Haitian Revolution. Get that at 1804movie.com. I will be doing my live view stream in Hawaii. I'll be in Hawaii this week because I'm finishing up on the Mink Slide album. So I got to go to Hawaii to get that energy, to get that Ohana, that Kalua energy, the Kahuna energy. I'm talking about liquor and shit. But I'm going to be out there working on the Mink Slide album in Hawaii, finishing up on that. And I will chop. I'll probably do a show before Sunday while I'm out there, depending on my internet connection, because sometimes, you know, when I go out of the continental U.S., the internet connection is a little janky. But we will see what the dealio is. All right? Y'all be good, family. And y'all follow me on Twitter at Tariq Nasheed. Follow me on Instagram at Tariq Elite.